Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest for this episode is Monty Ashley. Monty, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me, Scott.
It is my pleasure. So tell the nice people and the not-so-nice people a little bit about yourself.
I am a writer on the internet. I write about television for previously.tv and formerly Television Without Pity. I also write some things for the Tech Hive blog. And I used to work for Wizards of the Coast, who makes Magic the Gathering. I have made my life out of being a nerd.
Something with which many of us aspire to. And you're also a regular panelist on The Incomparable.
Oh, yes. I am a regular panelist on The Incomparable.
Which is how we met each other. So
yes.
And how this podcast was born.
And I was on all of the Game of Thrones themed episodes for the TV podcast.
That's right.
Incomparable spinoff.
You were the de facto host for that, as a matter of fact. Well, the Game of Thrones section,
yes.
At the very least. But we're not here to talk about Game of Thrones, that show that nobody watches. We are here to talk about Star Trek. And now, Monty, I know a little bit about your interest in Star Trek, because I do extensive research on all my guests.
Creepy.
that's the Random Trek guarantee. The creepiest podcast about Star Trek. But why don't you tell me, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would not. I have barely watched any Star Trek in my life.
Now how is this possible, Monty?
Well, I was born after the original series was over.
Mm-hmm.
And then for all the other series, I think I would start watching when it debuted. Like, mm-hmm. I remember when Next Generation started, I said, all right, I'm going to watch me some Star Trek. And I would get partway through the first season. As I remember, for Next Generation, I got to an episode where the Enterprise had accidentally leapt forward into the next galaxy over. And then a godlike being showed up and said they just had to throw their Enterprise into reverse and think happy thoughts, and they'd go back home. And that's about where I dropped it.
Well, the first season of Star Trek is notoriously a difficult time.
That appears to be the case. I mean, I remember watching the first couple episodes of Deep Space Nine. I may have made it all the way through the first season of Enterprise.
Well, that's impressive.
But and I've watched a couple of the movies. But really, Star Trek has been largely outside of my geek experience.
But you are engaged in this I don't know if it's a project, but this journey, shall we say, of watching the original series in order, except for tonight, because I made you watch a different episode out of order. So what made you decide to go back and watch the original series?
Shame.
All right, well, that's a powerful motivator.
I think of myself as a geek, I describe myself as a geek, and then someone will say, so what do you think of this Star Trek episode? And I just have to go, is that the one with the godlike space being? Because I figure there's a pretty good chance of that happening. That so I said I wanted to actually watch the episodes so I would be able to stop bluffing.
Well, what do you you've made it through a good chunk of the first season of the original series?
Six or seven episodes,
well,
I think.
That's a good chunk. What do you think of it so far?
I think Netflix is wrong to describe the show as being led by the unflappable Captain Kirk, because Kirk gets flapped an awful lot.
He is quite flappable.
There's an episode fairly early on where there's a good Kirk and an evil Kirk because mm-hmm. of a transporter malfunction,
yes.
And evil Kirk just chews up the scenery. And that's way more fun. Also, I do feel like a lot of the time they're shooting William Shatner with the same lighting effect that Angelica Houston gets in Adam's Family. He has this key light right across his eyes that I think is supposed to make him romantic.
I think it's true. And you'll notice also when they zoom in on the ladies of Star Trek, they give them a nice soft fuzzy lens and lighting to give them a feminine appeal, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I also feel that the uniforms in Star Trek look like the most comfortable space uniforms of any show or movie I've ever seen.
Even the original series with those super miniskirts that they're wearing?
In the pilot, not the pilot, but the actual first one aired, mm-hmm. there is a female coworker walking around in a pantsuit.
Well, that is true. They have I'm always impressed by the wide variety of uniforms that seem to inhabit the Enterprise.
Yeah, I have a comment about that in tonight's episode, in fact.
Excellent. Well, then why don't we just jump right into it? Tonight we've watched, which is considered a classic episode of Star Trek, mostly because of the character who is in it, probably not as classic as the original episode he was in, I, Mudd, starring the character Harry Mudd, for all of you Star Trek aficionados, which I assume is most of the people listening to this podcast, because otherwise, why are you listening? So this is an original series episode, season 2, episode 12, so Monty, you did have to jump out of order to watch this episode.
But luckily I had just watched Mudd's Women in the first season, so I knew exactly who this guy was.
So it made perfect sense.
Yes.
Because this episode it doesn't demand, but it kind of assumes that you know who Mudd is. They do a quick kind of explanation of who he is, but the big kind of surprise reveal is not so much a surprise if you don't know who he is. Because it's kind of like, I don't know who this guy is, and he's wearing a weird outfit.
Yeah. I have to assume when this episode aired, people were not in the habit of knowing what the title of the episode was.
I think that is true.
Although, it's a bit of a giveaway.
That is true. The big shocking thing. Well, it's not really a big shocking thing. I think it's kind of just a fun thing. And this is a funny episode, kind of.
It is. But, you know, Mudd is hiding his face even when you first go into his little throne room. He's got his head thrown back and he's drinking something just so he can make the big reveal of...
That's true.
It's me!
He wants to shock the Enterprise crew. And Kirk does not respond happily. But let's start where it begins, with Spock and McCoy walking through the corridors. and crewman Norman walks past and says, you know, hey, what's up? And McCoy turns to Spock and says, I don't like that guy. He's been on the... And Spock is like, he's only been on the ship for like 72 hours. Why don't you like him? And McCoy is like, well, he never smiles. He doesn't laugh. He always tells the same stories. Which leads me to wonder how much interaction McCoy has had with this random crewman who McCoy says has avoided two of his appointments. I don't understand how Dr. McCoy has gotten such a strong opinion of Norman in such a short period of time.
Well, I'm assuming that McCoy must make all the appointments in person, right? He has to be hunting Norman down and saying, you have to come down for a physical, and do you want to hear my amusing anecdote? And then Norman says, no, and I don't want to talk about my past, and then stalks off.
That's right. And he frowns. He doesn't smile or anything. There is a continuing theme as I'm watching many of these episodes, Monty, and I don't know if you've noticed this yet or not. But Star Trek, Starfleet security, I should say, is abysmal.
It is! Like, just in the six or so episodes I've watched, there's multiple times where just a simple set of security cameras would solve your problems of having multiple duplicates of Captain Kirk running around causing trouble.
Yes, and in this episode particularly, crewman Norman is shown looking at a sign that says authorized personnel only. So you know he's up to no good because he stops and ponders it for a moment so that you can read it. And then he just walks in. It's not locked or anything.
We put up the sign. What else do you want us to do?
He walks in and he gives the crew member who is stationed in this room, which is auxiliary control, the worst karate chop I've ever seen.
That is also what I wrote down. Worst karate chop ever.
Yeah, right to the neck there. And he's out cold, which makes us think, this Norman, he must be up to no good. And Norman does a bunch of stuff and overrides the Enterprise's navigation controls. And we cut to the bridge where Sulu says, Captain, our course has been changed. And so Captain Kirk's like, well, change back. And Sulu says, I can't. And then Captain Kirk says, all right, we'll send security to auxiliary control. Security goes to auxiliary control. They say, hey, nobody's here. Captain Kirk says, something's not right. And then Norman breaks into the emergency manual monitor, which apparently is needed so that you can override auxiliary control. It's very complicated running a starship.
Well, as I understand it, there's a lot of times in the series where they have to override things, right?
Yes.
Like, people are always climbing into the Jefferies tubes to manually do something.
It is true. A lot of switches have to be flipped.
Yeah, so it makes sense that he has to go to a lot of places
It is distributed across the Enterprise. Put their systems all in one basket, I suppose. So he goes into emergency manual monitor, beats that guy up, and then he goes into engineering, and a bunch of engineering people attempt to resist him, including Scotty. He knocks Scotty out. We think he knocks Scotty out, and Scotty's kind of slumped over the communicator with Captain Kirk saying, "Report, engineering, report." And Scotty can't report because he's knocked out. And then Norman walks up to the staircase that is leading, I guess, into the engines or something. And he sees a member of engineering come up at the top of the staircase. And I don't understand why this engineering crew member does this. But instead of running and calling security, he thinks, oh, I'll just jump off the staircase onto Norman. And it doesn't work out well because he gets knocked out as well.
Nope.
But it did make me laugh, so that's good. And then Scotty revives himself momentarily and says, "Captain, he's here." And Captain Kirk's like, "Well, tell me some more, Scotty," but Scotty passes out. And then Captain Kirk's like, "Okay, well, we found the intruder at least, so send all of our security to engineering." But the turbo lift opens, and who is it? It is Norman, and he grabs Captain Kirk by the arm, which Captain Kirk does not like one bit.
I did really enjoy Kirk's pretty calm read of, "Tell security we found the intruder."
That's like, right.
Things are going bad for him, but he doesn't want his security guys running around for no reason.
He's calm, cool, and collected.
You know, here, he is pretty unflappable. I will give him
that. See, there you go. He's encountered this many times. His ship has been taken over so many times now. Yeah. He's just very blasé about the whole thing.
At least have some sort of security door on the door to the bridge, right? Is that crazy?
That is, you know, they have locks on cockpits of airplanes now, so you'd think maybe they could put a lock on the bridge, but they don't. So Norman goes into the bridge. He says, basically, I've taken over your ship. You can't do anything about it because I've hot-wired it, so if you try to use a phaser on me or change the course of the ship, it'll blow up. And I'm immune to all your attacks. And Captain Kirk is like, "Why are you immune to all of our attacks?" And so Norman pulls up his shirt, and a little hatch opens in his stomach, and we find out he's an android.
The traditional way of showing people you're an android.
Yes. I was thinking about that, though, in kind of more, I guess they had difficulty in the 60s trying to place these like prosthetics on people, so they had like a fake abdomen. But in later Star Trek series, like The Next Generation, whenever they show some like Data working on himself, he always opens a little port in his head, which I guess is more shocking or something. So the prosthetics have advanced enough so they can show heads. Of course, now, I guess they would just do it CGI. But little fun fact about where they show circuitry on people in Star Trek. And so, oh no, he's an android. We can't stop him, so I guess we're going where Norman says he's going to take us. And then Norman immediately says, "We'll be there in 4 days, and I'm just going to take a nap." And
right where everybody is trying to walk.
Yes. He just powers himself down right in front of the turbo lift opening and makes himself a nuisance.
What a jerk.
He is pretty much a jerk. And then, so 4 days later, they arrive at this uncharted planet. There are, like, a 30-second scene where we see Uhura looking at something and then almost walking into Norman and getting very upset that he's just in the middle of no place.
Which is weird, because it's been 4 days. She's walked past him dozens of times, right?
Yes.
She works in this room.
She would think she would remember. Oh, that's right. The android that's taken over the ship is standing here. I should watch out for him. But she does not seem to remember that. Uhura has some interesting things happening to her in this episode. So this first error in her judgment is not the last we will see in this episode.
Although
it is foreshadowing. Although she comes in at the end. She comes through at the end. So all is not lost for Uhura. So we find out it's a Class K planet, which doesn't really make any difference. Norman wakes himself up and says, okay, all the bridge crew has to, except for Sulu, has to beam down. Sulu, you stay here. Nobody's interested in you. And this is where we get the big reveal. They beam down to the planet, and they come into some sort of throne room with lovely ladies flanking it. And who should we see on the chair?
Dom DeLuise.
Harry Mudd.
Basically the same thing.
Yes.
Dom DeLuise with a silly mustache.
Yes. They are easy to confuse. And Mudd declares, tells Captain Kirk, who's not pleased, and basically says, "Hey, Mudd, give me back my ship, and we're leaving." Mudd says, "Well, you're not, because I'm the Emperor. I make the rules, and that's against the rules. So, haha, I win." And he explains... He explains about how he's created all these androids for his amusement, and they use a lot of twins in this episode because all of these androids are mostly beautiful women, and they are all, you know, he has about 500 of each model that he's made, so they need to do some fancy footwork to make it look convincing. So there is a scene in which six of them of the same model come out.
Which, carefully, you know, spread out across the screen.
Exactly. It doesn't look too bad. You can tell that one set of twins is in one shot flanking the throne, and then they just have the twins in two different shots standing next to each other, and they just kind of composite them all together.
I enjoyed the fact that, like in the previous Mudd episode, these women are scantily clad, but they're all wearing more clothes than Uhura is.
That is true. They're scantily clad in a suggestive manner, which I guess is generally how you're scantily clad. But if you look at their costumes, I think it kind of makes sense what I meant.
Uhura is wearing a working miniskirt.
Exactly. She is professionally scantily clad because she has important communication things to do. So yeah, who beams down? It's McCoy, Uhura, Kirk, Spock, and Scotty comes down later, but I think that's
and
all.
Norman.
And Norman. Yes, Norman comes down as well. And so Mudd explains that he, you know, he was off being, and this is an interesting thing. He has a philosophy against patents, which I thought ripped from the headlines, because everyone's talking about patents. Harry Mudd is against them. And so he's been selling the rights to various patents to different aliens until he was caught. And then he had to steal a ship, but the ship was damaged. So he wandered into uncharted space and found this planet where these androids were waiting basically to serve someone. And so they decided to serve Harry Mudd. And Harry Mudd, being Harry Mudd, who is basically a scoundrel, decided to take advantage of them and, you know, create lovely female androids to service him and to do whatever he wants. And he can have anything he needs, which was great for a while, you get the sense. And then he kind of got bored.
And he also has a robot version of his horrible wife.
Yes.
In case he wants to reenact a sitcom or something.
Yeah, Estella is his horrible wife, who he's decided to make an exact replica of. So basically, he can turn on the android and then tell her to shut up at command, which gives you a glimpse into his character. although, to be fair, they played her to be, like, the worst possible wife ever.
Yeah, she does seem kind of horrible.
Yes. I mean, Harry Mudd, it's hard to feel bad for Harry Mudd. But once you meet Stella, you're like, well, I can kind of understand why he would go off into space. She's not very nice. He's not very nice either, so. But once he decided, okay, I'm bored, so androids, I'm outie. The android said, hey, not so fast. We want to study you and humans. So bring us more humans, and then we will let you go. So he comes up with this plot where he sends Norman off to just randomly get a starship. They don't really explain where Norman goes or how he gets this starship, but how he gets into Starfleet, I should say.
Yeah, he must have joined Starfleet, gotten a uniform, and then beamed up as part of the crew, right?
That's what I'm assuming. Or maybe he just got the uniform. He like knocked someone out, took their uniform, but then nobody is surprised. He's Norman. His name is Norman on the ship, and his name is Norman just regularly. That's his name. So,
and McCoy and Spock both know that he just joined the crew 72 hours ago or whatever it was.
So he probably, his records all must check out, unless Starfleet security once again is so bad that any random person in a uniform can just beam into the Enterprise.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
That might be. So it probably wasn't that hard for Norman to infiltrate the Enterprise, except you can't fool McCoy. He knew something was up.
Showing that emotion is better than logic.
That's right. That's basically the theme of this episode, I believe. And so Harry Mudd is like, I need to get some humans in here so I can get off this planet. They just fortuitously happen to take over the Enterprise. He is tickled pink to see Captain Kirk. Jamie boy, as he calls him.
I think tickled pink might be a good way to describe all of the acting choices made by Harry Mudd.
I did make a note at the end of this episode. Mudd is not a subtle performance.
Yeah. Even when he's sad, he really seems to be enjoying himself.
That's right. He is quite pleased with everything that's going on. And I think the actor is just gnawing on the scenery, but it makes it so much fun to watch because, I mean, it's completely not believable, but it's just fun that he is just this big character who has these oversized reactions to everything.
Well, especially in this case where, I mean, he was pretty over the top in the first episode he was in, but mm-hmm. now they made the decision, we're bringing this guy back. People want more Harry Mudd.
That's right. Let's turn it up to like 11,000.
That's what we're giving it to him.
We'll put him in a ridiculous outfit, even more ridiculous than the first outfit, with big epaulettes and all kinds of weird stuff going on, and just tell him to overact like crazy.
Don't worry, Shatner can keep up.
It is true. They go mano a mano with their overacting chops. And so they take the Enterprise crew into a little recreation area and say, hey, you guys, stay here. We can give you whatever you need, because this is – they often – call it a paradise, but I kept thinking, a paradise? I mean, this is a K-class planet, so that means they have to stay either underground or in a dome. And this, it doesn't seem like, to me, I would want to live out my life underground, no matter how many androids were around.
Yeah, they spend most of their time in lavender caves.
Yes. Which doesn't look like paradise to me. There's like one plant.
Yeah, but there's a laboratory.
There is a laboratory and an engineering laboratory and the promise of immortality, which is never brought up again. So we find out, oh no, the people who invented these androids, they're from another galaxy, their star went nova, and so they're all dead, and only this outpost of androids, which was led by Norman, has survived, and they have been looking for someone to service for many years, and then Mudd came along. And now they are intrigued by humans. And Spock thinks, wait a second. All these androids, he makes a big leap to think that all of the androids must have some kind of central control center because they're all connected to one another and they can't operate independently, which is not how I understand androids to work, but apparently that's the way they work in Spock's mind.
Yeah.
And he's right, so.
I mean, you can't argue with results.
That's true. And so he thinks logically there must be a central system, and if we disrupt the central system, then we can get the heck out of here and take our starship and leave. And all the while, Mudd is planning to take the starship and go off and do whatever it is Mudd does with the starship.
More space pimping, I expect.
Probably, now that he has an inexhaustible supply of lovely androids that he can sell.
Oh, yeah. These androids would go great on that mining place he was working with the last time.
That's true. He could probably charge a whole heck of a lot more. And there's no chance that they'll stop taking their medication and turn horribly old. And so they, Spock finds the central control room with very little problem and talks to Norman and says, hey, Norman, is this the central control? And Norman says, I can't tell you, which of course means yes. I am not programmed to respond in this area is what Norman says, which is a bad thing to say. He should have just said no, but he didn't. Well,
this is at the high point of robots and computers always talking about their programming or their memory banks whenever they have to explain something.
Yes, these robots are the robotiest robots you'll ever find. They speak in monotones. They all have little numbers around their neck on little chains to identify their not their model number. Well, it is their model number, but their model is not said. So there's like the Barbara model and the Norman model. But
I wouldn't mind a little beeping.
That is true. They don't beep nearly enough. There's some beeps later, but that's right. And so Kirk and Uhura and Chekov are getting a tour, and they're shown the Barbara model, which Uhura is intrigued by. And she says, well, how long do these models last? To which the response is, well, one of our bodies has never, failed, but we have an estimated life of 500,000 years. And, by the way, we can take a human brain and put it in one of our bodies, and you could live forever. FYI.
I'm afraid all that scene did was make me think of the show C-Lab 2021, which is the kind of show I've been wasting my time with instead of watching Star Trek to get caught up with everyone. There is a recurring discussion on C-Lab where they just ask each other over and over again, would you put your brain in a robot body?
Well, that's a good question. Monty, would you put your brain in a robot body?
If I have the strength of 10 gorillas, then yes.
Ah, well, that's good. I think I would be tempted, much like Uhura is tempted. They show she is the only person who seems intrigued by this idea of being able to live for 500,000 years and never losing her beauty. All the other people are like, eh, whatever.
Well, to be honest, Nichelle Nichols still looks pretty good.
You know, she might be an android.
Like, of all the people in this cast...
It is true. She's still a looker for however old she is. She's probably like 83 or something. But she's a darn good looking 83. I don't know if she's actually 83 or not. So someone will correct me, I'm sure. And this is where they go back to the recreation room. And now Scotty joins them. And he's kind of thrown in to the room for no apparent reason. Loudly protesting and yelling at Mud when he realizes who Mud is. And this is when Mud explains, oh, by the way, I hadn't told you this, Captain Kirk, but as you've been taking the tour of the android planet, we've been beaming down your crew and replacing them all with androids. So, you know, I now control your ship, and I'm going to leave. And Captain Kirk, not pleased by this turn of event.
Nice security, Kirk.
That's right. He didn't even know it was happening. Although, to be fair, earlier in this episode, his communicator was crushed, so... he could not talk to, but only his communicator. Nobody else's communicator.
Now, why is it that Sulu wasn't sent down? Because I feel like we never saw Chekov on the Enterprise. We never saw Sulu on the planet.
I do not know why they did not decide to take Sulu with them. I guess they didn't think that Sulu's skills were needed for study? I don't know. Although the whole crew has beamed down at this point. So yeah, Sulu is on this planet. We just don't see him. I guess they thought maybe having Chekov and Sulu was too much. Or perhaps George Takei said, I've read the script, and I'm not going to do any of this silly stuff that we will get to in a little bit.
I'm not sure he would have said that.
I don't know either, but there's a lot of silliness that's about to happen, people, is what I'm saying.
It's true.
And so Kirk is worried now that his crew is on this planet because even though they really never show it, they keep telling us that the androids can provide anything anyone wants. Though they do give us a couple of glimpses of it. So they, like, McCoy is shown the medical lab, and he's like, boy, I could spend the rest of my life in that lab.
Of course, it's off-screen.
Yes, we don't see it. They're expensive. Scotty takes a look at, like, their engineering lab, and Norman goes on about how, well, you know, you're happy that you can use any of this equipment you like. We can give you assistance, or you can do it yourself. Whatever you want, Scotty. Which Scotty's quite pleased with.
Now, at this point, I was convinced this was just going to be, like, the A-Team.
In which they would, like, fashion some kind of android of their own to beat up the rest of them or something.
Or he would beam them out or something. You can't give Scotty a full engineering lab and then have him say, well, I'm not going to use any of this to help us escape.
But that is exactly what they do. Yeah. They use the power of pantomime to escape. Which is what I always think, you know, miming is the perfect way to get off an android planet. But it is a very strange episode. Let me be clear about that. So Mud reveals his plan that he's going to go to the Enterprise, but they have the scene where he has all his luggage and he's surrounded by his androids and he says, "So long, suckers," to which the androids say, "No, you're not going. We have found out that you are deeply flawed, even for a human, and as such, we will not let you leave. And we're going to take the ship ourselves, because we think humanity is so flawed that it just needs us to guide it. And so we will give humanity whatever it wants to make it docile so it won't cause any more trouble." And then, you know, Kirk is not happy with this. Mud certainly is not happy with this, because he was like, I was getting out of here, but now I'm trapped with the rest of you people.
And it's nice because up until this point, Mud has been the villain. And it always feels weird for the comic relief guy to be the villain.
It is true. And now Norman is the villain, basically.
Yes.
He switches very quickly. And so let's go through the temptations that we have. Uhura is tempted by immortal beauty and life. McCoy is tempted by a medical laboratory. Scotty is tempted by an engineering laboratory. And Chekhov is tempted by apparently OK Wine and a couple of female androids, which he says, oh, you were programmed by Harry Mudd, with a bit of disgust. And then he realizes what that probably means, and so he's like, aha, this is better than Leningrad. He's quite pleased.
Meanwhile, the top ranks, Kirk, McCoy, and Spock, aren't really tempted by anything?
Well, McCoy is slightly tempted by the medical lab. Spock,
oh, that's true,
Spock
yeah.
and Kirk, no temptation whatsoever. Kirk is adamant he wants his lovely lady back, i.e. the Enterprise. And he is very unhappy with this whole thing. And then so Spock figures out that Norman, there's only one Norman, so that means that Norman must be, why there's thousands of other models, so that he figures, well, Norman must be controlling everything. And if we can overload Norman, we have our way out of here. And so they decide to do this because they figure, well, their plan, as far as I can tell,
such as it is,
is that they will be as illogical as possible, and this will overload the androids because there is. Go ahead.
Because the androids, if they see someone acting illogically, get so confused they shut down.
That's right. So they have the idea is that the androids are all part of this networked brain, and if they can't figure out something, they have to relay back to the brain, and then the brain will tell them what to do. And so this delay, while they're trying to do this, the androids are kind of stock still and their little necklaces flash and beep, Monty. So there's your beep.
Yeah.
And we notice this for the first time when Kirk says, well, you know, one of the androids says, well, what can I do to make you happy, Captain Kirk? And Captain Kirk says, well, give me back my ship. And she says, well, what desire do you have? And he says, I desire the Enterprise. And she says, well, the Enterprise is just a piece of equipment. You cannot desire it. And he, and he says, the Enterprise is a lovely lady and we love her. To which it quite confuses the android. And she flashes and kind of freezes.
Yeah. I'm not sure I believe that Mudd never once acted strangely or used a metaphor.
Especially since this whole episode he's acting incredibly strangely.
Yes.
And quite illogically. I would not think, Harry Mudd, he's a logical fellow.
Yeah.
And so they think this is what Captain Kirk, he spins this entire plan based on this one this one interaction with this android. And they have a very complicated, coordinated plan that everyone seems to be on board with.
Yeah, there's choreography. They planned this out step by step.
They must have practiced several times as well. It is very strange. And so the first phase of their plan is, well, the androids probably think that we're going to try to escape. So we have to look like we're trying to escape. So they knock Harry Mudd out.
Which is its own reward.
That's true. He is not on board with this plan, by the way. But they McCoy has a hypo spray, which he always does, and so he jams it into Mudd's neck, which I think might be, you know, against kind of medical practices. But he does it anyway, extreme measures. And Mudd is out. So Kirk runs into the throne room, presses the button to call some androids, and he says, oh no, Harry Mudd is sick. And the android's like, well, he's a human, so figure it out yourself. Kirk's like, well, we need our medical supplies.
Never mind about that magical medical laboratory you mentioned a couple scenes ago.
Nobody remembers that.
Only the Enterprise can save him.
That's right. And so she's like, okay, well, I've been told I should check this out. So she goes in and she checks it out. And they attempt to escape, but she realizes, oh, this you're trying to escape, so I'm not going to let you do this. And she leaves. And they're like, okay. Oh, no, this is when so she comes in and Uhura.
Yeah.
Betrays the crew by saying he's not sick, he's been injected with sleeping spray. They wanted to fool you so they could escape. And Kirk's like, Uhura, you fool, why did you do that? And Uhura says, I want beauty and immortality. And the android says, we will remember you always, Uhura, and we will give you, by the end of this episode, your new body that you can be transformed into. And let us never speak of this again. And she leaves.
Yep.
And then everyone, the viewer at home thinks, oh, Uhura's a traitor, although you don't really ever think that. Then we find out it's all part of Captain Kirk's multi-layered insane plan.
Yes.
And this is a fake-out, because this was not an escape plan, but they just needed an escape plan because they figured that the androids were expecting one. Right.
And there's never any hint that this actually mattered in any way.
Yeah, this part of the plan I don't understand why they even bothered with. But then they immediately go into the next part of the plan, which is to do a weird pantomime in which, so Captain Kirk goes into the throne room again. So Mudd has this throne room. He calls in some androids, and then in come Scotty and McCoy, who are pretending to play instruments. They're pantomiming instruments. And then in come Chekhov and Uhura, and they are dancing to this music that you cannot hear because it's being pantomimed. And so the androids say to Captain Kirk, why are they dancing? And Captain Kirk says, to celebrate. To celebrate what? Their captivity. And then Captain Kirk's like, hey, don't you enjoy the music? And that kind of freaks them out, and they start blinking a lot. And there's some slapping involved. Uhura slaps Chekhov.
And there's a spot where Kirk tells Chekhov, stand still. So Chekhov starts jumping up and down. And
that's the thing that does it, right?
Yeah.
So Kirk says, stand still to Chekhov. And Chekhov says, aye, aye. And he jumps and does like Russian jumps. And Kirk says, good job, Chekhov. And that is the point at which these highly advanced androids melt down because they cannot deal with the fact that they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing. I don't really understand why.
And they were supposed to be observing humanity, but whoever programmed to do that never considered that humanity might lie about anything.
It seems like a big flaw in these androids' programming.
It does,
because they can't deal with even the slightest lie. They just kind of blink out, freeze, and their little necklaces blink crazily. Apparently Norman cannot coordinate such things. And so Kirk says, well, we did our job. Let's hope Spock is doing his job. And so cut to Spock in this engineering bay where he is with two lovely androids. And at first he tries to do the Vulcan neck pinch on one of them. And that doesn't work because she's an android, which I think Spock would have known.
Come on, Spock.
He just tries. He's just so logical himself that he does not want to do what he's about to do. But he brings himself to do it, and he says to one... So, to be clear, these androids look exactly the same, because they are, in fact, twins.
What?
I know. And he says to one, I love you, and he turns to the other and says, but I hate you. And so the one who Spock hates says, but I look exactly like the one you love. To which Spock replies, yes, and that is why I hate you. And they both blow up, basically. They can't deal with it. So they shut down.
Spock's a lot more efficient on this than the rest of the crew.
That is true. He takes like 2 minutes to do it. The rest of the crew had to do this giant pantomime, and there was dancing, and there's multi steps to what they were doing. Spock is just like, here is a illogical statement. I'm out of here.
Here is a very slightly illogical statement.
Here is something that you should be able to handle without a problem, but you don't. And then this all leads up to Spock reports back to Kirk and says, okay, we've immobilized 4 androids, I guess, out of 200,000. So this plan is going well. So let's head to the central nerve center and talk to Norman. So they go and they talk to Norman. And they do a bunch of wacky stuff to Norman. They talk about, I forget what they talk about. They talk about a lot of stuff with Norman. But the end part is the most important part, at which Kirk says they let Mudd soliloquy for a while, talking about how freedom is great and how mankind needs freedom. Otherwise, he's just an android. And they do a pantomime with explosions. And Scotty dies because he's so happy. None of this seems to have any effect.
And the androids just have to take McCoy's word for it. McCoy's word for it that he's dead.
Yeah, they don't have. They can't check. They are unused to these humans. And so, yeah, then Spock pantomimes throwing some explosives to Mud. Mud pantomimes catching it, and then he puts a bunch of fake fusers and things. These are all, you know, pantomimed, and then it explodes, and everybody is, all the humans are pretending to be exploded, and all the androids are like, what the hell is happening? We don't understand.
That's what the audience is also doing.
It is true. Because, once again, like the earlier dancing and kicking around, none of this seems to really have any impact on the androids until the very last part, which is Captain Kirk and Mud standing on either side of Norman. And Captain Kirk says, listen to this, Norman. Everything Mud says is a lie. And then Mud says, I'm lying. And then literally smoke comes out of Norman's ears because he cannot compute what is going on. And he shuts down. And hooray.
Is this the point where I can say that Star Trek has no idea how computers work?
Yes, please.
Star Trek, for a fairly smart space show, has only the vaguest idea of what a computer is.
This is, well, it was the 60s, so maybe computers had no logic back then.
I'm just saying.
Well, I think you're right. This it really makes, their whole plan makes absolutely no sense. Especially since, as you said, they're only saying slightly illogical things and like, basically just acting like idiots.
Yeah, at least they presented a more or less real paradox towards the end there.
Yes, but their strongest one was the end that incapacitates Norman. And I think this is a fun episode, but the ending also makes no sense whatsoever. We're not at the end yet. So Norman is incapacitated, and then we cut to all the androids are working again, and it's never really explained why they must have left the Enterprise, right? Because the Enterprise crew is leaving. But they don't explain how this has happened or why the androids have changed their minds. But all we know is that Captain Kirk says to Mud, Mud's like, oh great, you can take me onto the Enterprise because we're leaving now and I can get off this planet. And Captain Kirk's like, well, about that.
I've decided to maroon you here instead.
Exactly. I've taken the law into my own hand, and you're staying here with the androids. The androids have agreed to study you until you stop being irritating, which is a vague goal, I think. I'm not sure how they're going to check that, but...
Yeah, I really wanted some clear measurements on what Mud is expected to do.
Like, how much less irritating does he have to be to be allowed back with the other humans?
If he just shaves off the mustache and cackles 50% less, is that okay?
That would be significantly less irritating. I will say that. And so, apparently the androids have agreed to keep Mud, even though they have said he's flawed and they aren't interested in studying him. And they have decided to give up their plan to take over the galaxy for no apparent reason. And they have decided to let the Enterprise crew go home. But before they go, Captain Kirk, showing how petty he truly is, says, oh, by the way, Mud, in addition to me stranding you here with a bunch of androids and basically leaving you by yourself, bereft of any human companionship, we've also created a special android to keep you company and to make sure that you don't exploit the other androids. And this is when three copies of Stella, his horrible wife, come out and basically berate him. And he overacts like crazy with his sadness and shock, especially when he notices that the third and final Stella that comes has the number 500 on her. So there are 500 copies of this android built to apparently drive Mud insane as he's imprisoned on this planet full of robots.
Did they fix the flaw in the androids that made them shut down when presented with mildly illogical behavior?
They do not say, so perhaps Mud can just quietly escape by talking about some wacky thing, like pantomiming drinking something.
Well, I don't know that Mud can quietly do anything.
You have a good point. Yeah, they don't... I think this episode is a lot of fun, and overall, I give it a thumbs up. But the ending is like they just ran out of time. And they're like, okay, we just need to end this and get the crew off. So we do it. It's done. Everybody's happy, but we won't explain why. And we'll strand Mud, which seems like a horrible punishment.
Yeah, I think just taking Mud back, throwing him back into space jail,
until he presumably escapes. And, you know, we wanted to come back again, but I guess that didn't happen.
No, he doesn't. yeah, so overall, an interesting and strange episode of the original series. And for the original series, that's saying a lot. So what did you think of this episode, Monty?
I enjoyed it. The second half or so with the crazy acting went on way too long for my taste.
Yeah, this is 40 or 50, almost 50-year-old show. So the pacing is quite different than what we're used to in normal shows. But even normal, I should say modern-day shows. But even with that understanding, I feel like you're right. Those scenes just went on forever.
Well, there's a lot of hand-waving to speed the show up early in it. Like, everybody on the Enterprise gets beamed down off-screen.
That is true, without putting up a fight, apparently.
In like, two lines of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
To make more room for what is clearly the showpiece.
The pantomime.
Yes.
Perplexing pantomimes. Well, which I guess I'm perplexed by. It's so clear. Imagine what an android who has very little interaction with humans would do. They would blow up.
But again, they've been watching Mudd for quite some time. What do you think Mudd gets up to when he's alone?
I'm not sure I want to think about what Mudd gets up to when he's alone, surrounded by a number of androids he's designed himself.
Yes.
I can guess, but this is a family show, so maybe I will leave it to be.
I will say this, Spock is very easily fascinated.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that. He does say fascinating, I think, twice in this episode. And he also says interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what his reaction when Kirk says, well, Spock, looks like the Enterprise has been taken over and we're going someplace we've never been before. Spock's reaction? Interesting.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting.
It is interesting, but he doesn't even follow up with any questions. It's just like interesting. He goes to his station.
Well, why would he have questions? He's sitting 10 feet from where Kirk is when Kirk got that information.
No, but he came in. He wasn't on the bridge when that happened.
Oh, that's true. You're right. You're right.
He came in past, I suppose, the statue of Norman.
There are a lot of little bits that I really liked that make this show feel like the characters know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that it just starts with an argument between McCoy and Spock.
That is true.
Like, we just assume they're always arguing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Or later on, there's a moment where Spock tells everybody how many of each robot there is. And McCoy says, how do you know so much? Spock says, I asked them. And the way McCoy just sort of shrugs and says, oh. All right, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. That was one of my, that was one of my favorite points in this episode. I just love that reaction of, oh, and then they just go on.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, makes sense. Thanks, Spock.
Yeah, I like a lot of the little bits more than I like the overall plot, which is extremely silly.
Yeah, this episode, I think, is a good episode of Star Trek, but if you are looking for a plot that makes sense, you should watch a different episode of Star Trek. If you're just looking for a fun, kind of wacky, watch a couple of actors chew the scenery and a bunch of actors do some crazy pantomime, iMUD is the show for you. And it does a lot of good character building as well with the relationships, as Monty pointed out. So it's a good episode. Thumbs up from me. All right, Monty. Well, thank you for joining me and watching iMUD out of order with the rest of your original series watching. Thank you for being a great guest, Monty.
Glad I could help.
Next on Random Trek, Enterprise Season 1, Episode 14, Sleeping Dogs.